trust you can handle this contraption.
It goes by hot air.
Oh, then you can.
Hot air balloon rides can provide a peaceful experience, drifting with the breeze, flying high above the earth below. Some riders, like our guest today, love it so much they train to become pilots. It's a process that requires one-on-one lessons and plenty of flight training. But for the people who are passionate about flying, it's worth every bit of the effort. Welcome to Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. So what's it like to fly high above the sky in a hot air balloon? And what does it take to pilot one yourself? Today, we explore that world and we invite you to join in too. Call in at 800-780-9742 with your questions, or you can email us too at ideas@wpr.org. John Bullock is a 1985 Wausau East High School graduate who moved to Genoa City after graduating from the University of Wisconsin-Platteville with a degree in civil engineering. His fascination with ballooning started 25 years ago when he attended the Hudson Hot Air Affair. That's an annual festival of hot air balloons. It wasn't long before he bought his own craft, Bubbles, earned a pilot's license, and began what would become a lifelong passion that involves the entire family. John, welcome to Route 51.
Well, thank you for having me.
You've been doing this a long time, and I want you to take me back to the beginning. You went to this balloon rally. Had you ever been in a balloon before you did that?
No, I'd never even seen one in person prior to that event.
Really?
Yeah. It was 1998. It was Wisconsin's sesquicentennial celebration, and they put a flyer out with all these events in the state. And my wife at the time and I looked at this flyer and said, hey, what's this Hudson Hot Air Affair? Let's go check it out. So we drove over to Hudson one Saturday afternoon, not realizing we'd missed half the event. But that night we ended up staying at the same hotel that the pilots were staying at. So we spent some time talking with the pilots that evening. And the next morning, Sunday morning, we were invited to go out and help one of the pilots set up his balloon. And as it turned out, my wife got a ride in that balloon. And so she was pretty excited by that, and just seeing the balloons up close was really cool. So then we decided, well, next year we're going to come back. So we went back the next year and went on Friday at the beginning of the event. So we got to be there the whole. Yeah, we got to be there for the whole thing, and I was able to get a ride. And I just remember it was a short flight, probably 20 minutes or so, and we landed, and my wife ran up and she's like, "Well, how was it?" And I just turned and said, we're going to get one of these someday.
it was that good.
Yeah, it was really cool.
What does it feel like? I mean, when you're rising up in the air, what does it feel like? Take me through it.
Well, it's hard to explain because, I mean, when you're on the ground, you're kind of getting bucked around by the wind a little bit. And so you think, oh, this is going to be a bumpy ride. But once you're in the air, you're moving with the air. So it's just – you're completely – it's like being still, but you're moving. I mean, you're up – you're going over the trees, but there's no wind because you're moving with the wind. So you're in calmness.
Wow.
But, you're just moving over the ground. It's really cool.
It sounds cool. And you and I have known each other for a long time, and I told you I'm too afraid to go. But now when I hear you talk about it, it makes me think, I don't know, it sounds pretty cool to me. But I want to know how you – acquired Bubbles. I mean, you immediately knew after that first ride, we're going to get one of these.
Right.
So how did you go about finding one to buy?
Well, what we did starting out is we just started talking to more of the balloon pilots and started going to more and more events. And so we became friends with several of the pilots. And there was a couple of people that were pilots out of Ellsworth, Wisconsin, that we kind of hooked up with and crewed for them for several years. And then it was fall of 2003, and that's my friend Bill Marhoon called me and said, hey, I found a hot air balloon for you. And I was like, all right. I don't really know if I can afford a balloon or not right now, but go ahead. And he said, well, it's Bubbles. And that was their balloon.
Oh.
And we loved that balloon. So it was like, well, we're just going to make it happen. So that's where we got.
Are they super expensive? I mean, what's a typical hot air balloon?
I to be honest with you, I mean, a new one now, I probably $40,000 or $50,000 starting. Whoa. Would be my guess. Mm-hmm. But I mean, there's so many used ones on the market. I bought mine used, you know, 20 some years ago, mm-hmm. and got the balloon all the equipment I needed to fly it, the trailer, everything for $15,000. And you still see them on the market for those kind of prices. So
what kind of equipment do you need besides the balloon and the basket? What all do you have to have to make this work?
Not a whole lot of equipment. I mean, it's the balloon, the basket, you know, the actual pieces of the aircraft. But then you need an inflation fan. When we go to set the balloon up, you know, we start with it tipped on the ground and fill it with cold air with a fan. So we've got a big gas-powered fan with basically a small airplane propeller on it that we use to blow cold air into the balloon.
Mm-hmm.
And then some way to move it around. So a lot of people have pickup trucks. I started with a trailer for many years, and now I've gone to a pickup truck with a lift gate on it just so I don't have to drag the trailer around.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's really it. I mean, there's not a lot of equipment. We've got radios so we can, you know, communicate with our ground crew. And
once you have all the equipment, is it expensive to operate? Is there a lot of expense involved moving forward?
Oh, not really. I mean, insurance is expensive, but insurance is expensive for everything. And then there's the cost of propane. But a lot of times when we're at events, you know, propane is provided by sponsors at the events, so that cost is covered. But, yeah, if we're flying on our own, it's propane cost. My balloon is small,
mm-hmm.
so I'll probably go through 20 gallons of propane in a flight.
Mm-hmm.
So not horrible, but there is that expense.
Why cold air? Why is cold air used?
Well, when we start, we lay the equipment out on the ground,
mm-hmm.
so it's tipped on its side. And we're just using the air that's you know, the ambient temperature. So
let me take you back to take me through step by step, like how you set up, because
okay.
I think that'll probably answer the question.
Okay, right.
Yes. Okay.
Okay. We start out with everything laid out on the ground on its side. So the basket is tipped on its side, with the burner attached to it, and then the envelope attached to all of that. And then we have a couple of crew members hold the mouth of the balloon open, which is the end of the balloon towards the basket, so that then we can start that fan and fill the balloon with the cold air.
Okay.
And once it's inflated with cold air, of course it's still tipped on its side, then we'll light the burner and get the balloon hot, and it'll stand itself up. The heat from the burner then heats the air in the balloon, and it stands itself up at that point.
Okay. How many people do you need as part of the crew?
I've flown with as few as three crew members, but again, my balloon's relatively small.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, some of the ride balloons, of course, they want larger crews, 5-6 people. It all depends, too, what you're comfortable with,
mm-hmm.
as far as how experienced your crew is. You know, more experienced crew, you need less crew oftentimes.
Mm-hmm.
Generally, my crew is just people out of a crowd at a festival. So I'll grab a couple of extra hands so that I can kind of point at people and say, hey, grab this, do this. It's not like a high skill thing to set up a balloon necessarily.
So even I could do it.
Yes, okay. Absolutely. Absolutely.
So you need somebody to help you, you know, with that balloon part. Do you need somebody on the ground then to chase, or, I mean, to pick you up when you land? What happened?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so you need somebody driving the vehicle and knowing where you're going to land.
Right, yeah. 90% of the time, probably 95% of the time, we don't land anywhere near where we took off.
Right.
So right, the chase crew follows.
Okay.
And we're communicating between each other on the ground, you know, the crew in the vehicle and me up in the air. And I'm kind of giving them directions, you know, here, turn left here, turn right here. Or they can follow me on the GPS and get an idea of where I'm going to be when I land.
Do you know where you're going to land always? Do you plot a course?
No, general direction.
Okay.
I mean, we know. When we start, we know the general direction of the wind,
mm-hmm.
and we'll put a pie ball in the air. It's a helium balloon. It's pie ball, short for pilot balloon.
Okay.
We'll watch that before we take off, and as it ascends, we can watch to see which direction it goes at different elevations. You know, the air at different elevations will go slightly different directions.
Mm-hmm.
So we can get a pretty good idea of the direction we're going to be heading. So most of the time, well, at a festival, of course, we generally start at the festival grounds and then land wherever we land. But if I'm flying for fun by myself, oftentimes what I'll do is I know where I want to land or the general area where I want to land, so then I'll go and work backwards and take off from an area that's going to get me to the area I want to land in.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay. Tell me a little bit about the weather. I mean, so many times you go to these balloon rallies and then the weather doesn't cooperate and the balloons can't go up. And what do you need to happen? What's the perfect weather situation for a balloon to go up?
I don't know what perfect is necessarily. You know, a lot of people think, oh, well, calm is perfect, but actually we want there to be some air movement because calm, you just go nowhere. You end up kind of hovering in the space you took off in, which isn't always a good thing. Mm-hmm. But generally relatively calm on the ground is what we're looking for, and then some air movement once we get, you know, 300, 400, 500 feet up in the air so that we get to go someplace.
How much wind is too much wind, though?
Anything over about 8 knots on the ground, that's kind of my limit. Different pilots probably have a little different threshold, what they choose. And once you're in the air, I mean, 40 miles an hour, if you're up in the air a long ways where there's nothing to hit, mm-hmm. The issue would be wind shear, where the wind changes direction or speed really quickly. That can cause problems.
How hard is it to come down if weather changes drastically, or, you know, that kind of thing happens? Does that create a panic?
No. There's, I mean, we always kind of laugh. The balloon's going to come down eventually, no matter what. but we can control the ascent and descent pretty well. I mean, it's there's a little delay in the controls. It's just something you learn as a pilot. Mm-hmm. Flying one that, you know, when you hit the burner, the balloon doesn't react immediately. There's a delay before it'll go up. Mm-hmm. Just like if you pull the vent, there's a delay before you'll come down. So it's just a timing thing, and you learn that as you learn to fly.
Is it, so it's not too hard to make a soft landing? I'm picturing
No. And you'd have to ask some of my passengers, I guess, what they consider a soft landing or what I do.
How do you choose a safe landing site? I mean, do you scope out and say, I'm going to go to this area because I know there's plenty of room? Or, I mean, what plays a role there?
That's what we try to do. Mm-hmm. But the main thing is, and probably the biggest issue with hot air balloons, is power line strikes. So we're always on the lookout for power lines. Anytime we're flying close to the ground, got to watch for power lines, because that's just not going to be a good situation no matter what happens there. But if it's relatively calm on the ground, you can squeeze a balloon into a pretty tight spot. I've landed in people's backyards.
Really?
But, yeah. It's kind of neat. They get surprised, you know, all of a sudden they walk out and there's a balloon in their back, stood up in their backyard. But
I can't even imagine.
But if it's relatively windy on the ground, then we need a more open space. A cut hay field is like what I'd consider perfect in the summer or
yeah.
And in the winter, it's great because all the fields are covered in snow. You just find a snowy field and drag to a stop.
What do you say to a homeowner who comes outside in their bathrobe with their cup of coffee and sees your balloon sitting in their backyard? Hey, sorry?
What? Yeah. Sorry to drop in on you.
Oh, I love it. I love it. We're talking hot air balloons today with John Bullock, our guest on Route 51. Ahead, we'll hear about what it takes to become a pilot, and we'll answer your questions, too, when you call us at 800-780-9742. You can email questions to us as well, ideas@WPR.org. I'm Shereen Seward. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Hey, Mr. Wind, just keep us safe. Sky, there's no curtain.
Yes, we'll have fun.
So everyone, come on. Hey, you on the ground. Take a look up and see what we found.
Nothing to tie us. Bluebirds come up to guide us.
When you're beside me, we can
You're listening to Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Shereen Seward. We continue our discussion on hot air ballooning with pilot John Bullock, and he'll answer your questions, too, when you email us at ideas@WPR.org, or you can call 800-780-9742. You very quickly decided that you wanted to buy the balloon and become a pilot. So what's all involved in that process?
As far as becoming a pilot?
Yeah.
It's if you look at the regulations, it doesn't sound like it's much. It's 10 hours of flight time, a written test, and a flight test. The thing is with a hot air balloon is oftentimes flights are shorter than an hour, mm-hmm. especially training flights. If you're doing a lot of maneuvering in the air, you're using a lot of propane. So I had a lot of flights that were only 20 minutes, a half hour long. So I had quite a few flights before I actually got my 10 hours. And then that 10 hours is a minimum.
Okay.
I mean, that's the absolute regulatory minimum is 10 hours of flight time.
Is that enough? I mean, do you feel like
no,
that's a bit?
No, I don't. I had more hours than that. I don't remember how many more at this time. But
how did you find somebody to teach you?
I got lucky. The gentleman I bought the balloon from was a commercial pilot, so he was able to train me.
Okay. Okay. And then there's a test you have to take and
right. Written right. test with it's the same type of a written test an airplane pilot would have to take, mm-hmm. just geared towards lighter than air, so hot air balloons. Mm-hmm. And then a flight test as well.
So there aren't any who takes you on the flight test? Like
there's FAA certified
okay. Are there FAA certified training programs for this too? Like can you take a class, for example?
There are several schools.
Okay.
Right off the top of my head, the Balloon Training Academy is one you can find online. They do ground school training to help you take your written test, and then they'll also do flight training. There's several schools out in Albuquerque, New Mexico area. In Wisconsin, the Fox Valley area has several balloon pilots that are commercial pilots, really good pilots that are always willing to train students.
Was there ever a point during the training where you were like, boy, I don't know. This is a lot. This is, I don't know.
One of my first solo flights after being checked off as being okay to solo, I was flying in Burlington, Wisconsin, and it was a hot summer afternoon. There was some turbulence in the air. I got caught in a thermal that shot me up several thousand feet unexpectedly, and I came out of that okay, and then when I came in to land, the lake effect wind picked up, which is pretty common in that part of the state off of Lake Michigan. So I was landing pretty quickly. I ended up bowling over some corn in a cornfield, and then I landed so hard in somebody's front yard that the balloon actually kind of bounced on the ground, and when it came out of the bounce, I was in their backyard.
Oh no.
I bounced over their house. So that was a bit frightening. And
a bit?
But again, that was many years ago, and you know, so one of my first solo flights. I had very little experience, so it was a pretty good panic moment.
did you consider giving up at that point?
When my crew ran up to me, I was laying on the ground in the backyard. With, you know, the envelope, the balloon had tipped over, and I was just kind of laying there. And I remember looking up and saying, I don't know if I want to do this anymore.
But who could blame you? Oh, my goodness. But you stuck through it. And right. Do you ever have to get recertified, or is it like a one-time thing?
No, every 2 years I have to take a biennial flight review, so an actual flight with a commercial pilot or an FAA-certified pilot. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, when your type of license, can you help other people learn, or do you have to have a different kind of training for that?
I've just got a private license. It's like both of my kids are student pilots. They can fly with me. I can help teach them to fly, but none of those hours count. Like they can't log those hours towards those 10 hours. You have to have a commercial pilot's license to do that.
Okay. Do you think you'll ever do that?
I have no interest in being a commercial pilot, to be honest with you. I know a lot of people have asked me if I wanted to do it, and I like flying for fun, and it's a great excuse for me to be able to tell people when they say, hey, I'll pay you for a ride. I say, nope, sorry, I can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Oh. There you go. Well, I want to bring up the family thing. You said that both of your kids are student pilots, so this really became a family effort for you. When did your kids first get involved, and what were their roles along the way?
Both of our kids were involved since they were born. I mean, they went to every event with us, every rally. Until they were 8, 9, 10 years old was, you know, when they really strong enough, big enough to help move things and hold things. But they've been involved in it ever since they were born. Yeah. I mean, I remember my daughter sleeping in the back of a car in an airplane hangar at one of the balloon pilots' wedding receptions during an, you know, at an event. So.
Well, I mean, what a cool thing though to be able to bring your whole family into something like that, and just what an experience that must be for you.
The whole community is like that. You'll see every balloon pilot; their whole family's usually there. There's so many pilots that their families. It's multi generations. I mean, sometimes three generations of pilots in the same family. It's pretty neat.
Is there a code of conduct that hot air balloons follow? I mean, like, are there rules of the road, so to speak, for flying? Like, how do you have to stay a certain amount away from a different balloon, or be aware of land regulations of where you're flying or where you're landing?
Well, we follow the same regulations that airplanes do as far as airspace. Okay. Landing, because we're landing most of the time on private property, we try to get permission in advance. Like I say, oftentimes you drop in and, hey, sorry, I dropped in. And ask for forgiveness. But usually, too, if they say no, we can take off and find a different place to land. As far as rules of the road, flying with other balloons, the biggest thing is you can't see up. You know, you've got this great big envelope over you. Mm-hmm. So you have to be aware when you're flying in groups of balloons where the other balloons are, and oftentimes pilots will carry an air horn or a whistle. So if I would fly right over the top of another balloon at an event, mm-hmm. If I don't think they saw me, I can tap the air horn or blow the whistle just to kind of give them a heads up that, hey, I'm over the top of you, so they don't go up and come into me. And if they do start coming up, then it's my job to go up with them to make sure that we don't collide.
How challenging is that to be in a big group like that? I mean, it seems like that must add a whole different layer of complexity to the flying experience.
It can make it somewhat challenging, but it's a lot of fun, too. I mean, I don't go to a lot of really big events. Usually the biggest events I'm at are 40 or 50 balloons. Mm-hmm. And I've known most of those pilots for a long time, so we trust each other and are paying attention. So, I mean, I've been in a stack of three balloons sometimes where I'm in the middle. Mm-hmm. So I've got a balloon underneath me. I've got to watch if he starts coming up. Then there's a balloon above me that I know is there, so I don't want to do anything, you know, mm-hmm. quick. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's got to have an opportunity to get out of my way. So you just have to pay really close attention.
Have you ever had anything go wrong?
No.
No?
People sometimes are surprised when they see two balloons collide in the air. Mm-hmm. And as long as we're colliding envelope to envelope, you know, next to each other, it doesn't do any damage or cause any problem at all. We know we're going to tap each other. And
that's okay.
And that's okay. You just don't want a basket to get into the envelope of another balloon because you could tear the envelope.
Oh, okay. Okay. Are you ever scared? I mean, you obviously were scared the time that you had that experience that you described. But are you ever scared now?
Not really scared. There's times where you get a long way into a flight, you're running low on propane, and it seems like landing sites just aren't coming up. So it's a little stressful that way. Mm-hmm. But not really a fear. It's just a matter of, oh, if I'm going to have to put the balloon down in a spot that's not really ideal.
Mm-hmm. When you put the balloon down in a spot that's not ideal and you end up in somebody's yard, have you ever had anybody angry with you? Have you ever had anybody who was like, get off my lawn, kid?
Just once.
Yeah.
just once, yeah. Zane ran up to the front door, my son, mm-hmm. To ask permission if we could land in the backyard. We already had. Mm-hmm. And the homeowner was just screaming at him. It was,
oh, no. Yeah.
So we took off and found another place to land. Yeah, she was a little irate.
Well, I guess you have to respect that, right?
Right, right. It's their property, absolutely. So.
Sure. I mean, how much control do you have, though, over your trajectory when you're piloting and you're blown a little off course?
Well, I mean, it's just a matter of picking a different place to land. Okay. I mean, there's always multiple places to land. Like I say, there might be the ideal one. Ideal to me would be right next to some place where my crew can come and pick me up. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, if that's not possible, so you end up out in the middle of a hayfield and you have to carry the equipment, you know, a quarter of a mile to a road, mm-hmm. you know, it's annoying and a lot of work, but again, it's better than doing something where you'd cause an injury or damage to somebody's property.
Are there instruments inside the balloon that you use when you're flying? It might sound like a dumb question, but I've never been in one, so.
No, that's a good question. my balloon, I've got the old analog instruments. I'm kind of an antique-y kind of a pilot, so mm-hmm. I've got a gauge that shows how fast I'm going up or down, and I've got a gauge that shows my altitude above sea level, and then a temperature gauge that shows the temperature at the top of the envelope.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. A lot of pilots now have gone digital. I probably will someday. They've got GPS with them, and you know they've got weather right on board with them. So they've got some more things to look at. But really, you don't need a lot. You're spending your time looking out where you're going. I mean, the instruments are there. I don't look at them very often.
Really? What's the highest altitude you ever flew? Do you know?
I've been over a mile in the air.
Really?
Yeah. And to be honest with you, once you get more than a couple thousand feet in the air, it doesn't seem any different. I mean, things are just small underneath you. Mm-hmm. It's actually more fun to fly closer to the ground.
Where How
you
come?
Can, well, you can see more. It's just more interesting. And it's fun when you're flying in a real hilly area. It's fun to be able to kind of zip up and down over right at treetops, right up and down the hills. It just makes it more of a fun flight.
Have you ever participated in any of the races, like balloon races, and like how do those work? Do you know?
I don't generally. The rallies I go to, we have what we call fun flights.
Mm-hmm.
So usually a hare and hound competition where one balloon takes off prior to everyone else,
mm-hmm.
and then everyone else's job is to see if they can fly over the spot that balloon landed, and you drop a beanbag or a stuffed animal or something onto a big X they put on the ground to see who can be the closest.
Mm-hmm.
That's the kind of events I'm getting involved in. There are national competitions. I mean, there's pilots that take the sport of flying, competition flying, very seriously, but mm-hmm. that's just not my thing.
That's not what you do it for.
No. I've always just been laid back, fun fly, and even when I've been at the events that do have the competitions, a lot of times I'll spend a good portion of the flight flying towards the target, and then I'll realize, I want to go somewhere else. I'll just kind of give up on it. I'd rather go play over this pond over here or something, so I end up going a different direction.
What are some of the coolest hot air balloon events that you've been to? I mean, you must have gone to a lot.
Yeah, quite a few. Some of the neatest. Sioux Falls, South Dakota used to have the Great Plains Balloon Race. That was a really fun area to fly. You're flying right next to an Air Force base, so there'd be fighter jets zipping around.
Oh, cool.
That was pretty neat. To be quite honest with you, the Wausau event is the Taste and Glow now. It used to be at the airport downtown. Now it's out in the country. But that's a great event. That's a lot of fun. It's great to fly Wausau just because I'm from Wausau, so I know so many people. It's fun.
And I think anybody who goes to the Wausau event would recognize your balloon immediately, the Bubbles balloon. Because you've been here, you know, before you moved back to Wausau, you were coming back here.
Yeah, we've
pretty much every
been
year.
back to Wausau many years now.
What do you think the hardest, most challenging part about flying is? Is it hard?
I think decision making is always the challenging part. Especially at events, you feel this pressure. The crowd wants you to fly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the sponsors want you to fly, the event wants you to fly, and you've got to stick to your guns on your limits. You know, if I don't feel I like the weather conditions, I don't feel comfortable flying for whatever reason, I've got to just be sure to stand my ground and say, no, I'm not going to fly this flight. And that's really the challenge. As far as actually flying the balloon, I mean, there's the challenge is getting the balloon to do what you want it to do, but that's a fun challenge. It's not a it's not a stress challenge.
I want to circle back to the training we were talking about a few minutes ago. I should have asked you, how long did it take you to go through all of that?
It was just about a full year for me. We bought the balloon in 2003, and then in September of 2004 is when I got my license.
When you bought the balloon, were you just itching? Like,
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Got to go fly. Got to go fly. We lived in Genoa City, and my instructor lived in Ellsworth. So, I mean, it was a commitment to go fly the balloon. We'd have to go. We'd spend weekends up in Ellsworth. You know, we'd check the weather in advance. Mm-hmm. And it looked like it would be good. And sometimes we'd spend an entire weekend there and not get to fly because the weather would turn. Ugh. So,
And how frustrating is that? I mean, when you go to an event and you go to all this trouble and you can't ever get up in the air.
Right. It's disappointing. It's disappointing for the crowd, of course. It's disappointing for the sponsors, the event. And, I mean, we're there. We want to fly. That's mm-hmm. the whole point. We're there. As pilots, though, we've got the advantage. We've got this big community, and we're all friends. Mm-hmm. So it's just an opportunity where we're just going to hang out and visit with each other and have a good time for the weekend, whether we fly or not.
I'll ask you a little bit more about that in just a moment. John Bullock is with us today on Route 51 as we continue our discussion on what it's like to ride and pilot a hot air balloon. We'd love to hear from you, too. If you want to share an experience or you have a question about hot air ballooning, you can call us, 800-780-9742. You can also send an email to ideas@wpr.org. I'm Shereen Seward. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio.
The setting sun sets fire to your sky, and the starlight begs you to transform. Time left to run, only to fly. Let the winds carry you above the storm. So you grab your torch and you light it, and you point it at the moon. And as life looks a little less than inviting, run away in your hot air balloon, in your hot air balloon.
You're listening to Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward with our guest, John Bullock. What would you like to know about the hot air balloon experience? You can email us at ideas@wpr.org or join us by phone. The number to call, 800-780-9742. You mentioned the hot air balloon community being really close. I mean, what is that like? I mean, do you all tend to hang out together outside of the event experience? Are you all friends? What is it like?
It's a great big group of friends. I mean, whole families are involved. We've known these same families now for, you know, 25 years, some of them. And as far as outside of ballooning, a little bit, occasionally, we run across each other, cross paths. But most of it's in the ballooning, you know, in the act of ballooning somehow, either at events or we talk to each other a lot via email now and text. Somebody will say, hey, I want to go fly on Saturday morning. Who wants to come? Mm-hmm. You know, and a half a dozen balloons will show up and we'll just go fly for fun.
Sounds fun.
Yeah, it's mm-hmm. awesome. And like I say, it's a lot of really great families involved. So
I always wondered what it was like behind the line. You know, when you go to a balloon rally and there's that line, do not cross the line because that's where the pilots are. It just looks like you guys are always having such a great time back there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, unless we're actually in the act of getting ready to fly, I mean, we're running around back and forth talking to each other, and we've got cheese trays and snacks. it's a big picnic, you know. It's mm-hmm. just getting back together with sometimes people come from out of state that we only see at one event a year or two events a year. So, you know, get back together with them and see what's going on in their lives. And it's like a big family reunion every time, really.
Yeah, it's interesting. You talked about the Hudson event and how they just kind of welcomed you in when you first went and you wound up at this hotel with the pilots. That had to feel pretty cool.
Oh, right. And that's how everyone gets involved. That's how I've ended up with crew over the years. You know, somebody comes to an event and how do I get involved? I'm like, here, stand and hold this. And a lot of times, especially when the weather's nice where we get to fly every flight at an event, I never fly alone. I always want to take somebody with me. Generally, the sponsor is somebody that gets a flight, mm-hmm. you know, at every event. But after that, if you've come and helped me, you know, we get the balloon set up, I'll jump in, let's go, and
how many people can fit in your basket?
Legally, I can take two passengers with me.
Okay.
I generally just take one. I've, again, got a really small balloon. If I put, you know, two passengers with myself in the basket, we're pretty much snuggled up where we can't even move. So I generally just take one passenger.
Have you flown bigger balloons yourself?
Very little. Most all of my flight time is in my own balloon. Mm-hmm. I have occasionally during my biennial flight reviews flown somebody else's balloon with them in it. So a larger balloon, I think. Mine is about 63,000 cubic feet, which, again, pretty small for balloons. I've flown 105,000 cubic foot balloon a little bit. So,
are the balloons with the bigger baskets more difficult to fly? Like, with more people in it, does that make it more complicated or difficult?
I think the biggest – it's like comparing a sports car to a truck, right? My balloon is small and it handles and reacts pretty quickly. You get a great big ride balloon, especially as, you know, these great big balloons that carry 12 or 14 passengers.
Mm-hmm.
I can't imagine. I've never flown one that big, but I just can't imagine it reacts that quickly. I mean, you've really got to kind of plan in advance what that balloon's going to do.
Yeah, and the concentration factor when you've got all these people talking. I mean, do you think that complicates things
too? Oh, it's got to. Yeah, commercial. I give a lot of credit to commercial pilots. I mean, they do a great job. I mean, you look at how safe ballooning is overall. Once in a while, you know, you hear about a balloon crash on the news, but they're few and far between. Commercial pilots really do a great job, and yeah, they've definitely got to concentrate.
How safe is it? I mean, people like me who are scared to go in a balloon, you know, we worry about that. Maybe I'm a little bit afraid of heights too. But how safe is ballooning really?
Oh, it's a really safe sport. I mean, I don't have statistics with me, but again, you'll hear about the one horrific crash mm-hmm. a year or every other year where people were hurt or killed possibly. But when you think about all the flights taking place all over the place all the time with no injuries and no problems, mm-hmm. it's a really safe sport.
Tell me about those crazy shaped balloons that we see at festivals. You know, sometimes they're shaped like an octopus or they're shaped like a big old fish. Are those harder to pilot? Does it take a different kind of technique?
I think once they're in the – and again, I've never flown one, but just talking with those pilots, some of them, it seems like once they're inflated, for the most part, they fly like any balloon. People have probably seen the Wally balloon mm-hmm. in Wausau, the great big fish.
Mm-hmm.
That one, because it's long and flat, I imagine the wind pushes that around, does things to it that are kind of strange. But mm-hmm. I think the biggest thing with the shaped balloons is the difficulty in setting them up and packing them up again.
Mm.
There's just a lot to them.
Do you have a favorite balloon story, a favorite experience, like the best balloon ride you ever took?
Oh, there's so many. Some of the fun ones, we'll do what's called a splash and dash, where you're flying over a lake and you touch the basket in the water and hope that's all you do is just touch. But I've had several successful splash and dash flights.
Have you had some unsuccessful?
It's called a plunk and dunk. Yeah, where you're wet up to your waist. Yeah. And then, of course, you've got to really put some heat in the balloon to get it out of the water. So once you pop out of the water, then you shoot up in the air like a rocket. But, yeah. But one of my favorites is I had an airplane pilot with me, and he'd never been in a balloon. So I was flying over one of the Twin Lakes in southern Wisconsin, and we were probably going, you know, 1 or 2 miles an hour, 6 inches off the water. And he kept poking me and saying, "John, there's trees. John, there's trees." What are you talking about? Well, he's an airplane pilot, so that he's looking at the trees across the lake
mm-hmm.
and panicking because we're going towards them, but not realizing, you know, we're not going to be there for a half an hour.
I love that.
That was hilarious.
I love that. Do you have a favorite festival moment? I mean, any memorable moments at festivals that you can share with us?
Again, there's so many.
Mm-hmm.
I like the people at festivals. That's mm-hmm. why I like going to them. A couple of years ago in Wausau, we had perfect weather at the Taste and Glow, and I flew, you know, every flight that we could fly you know, from Thursday all the way through Sunday morning. It was just neat to be able to come out of an event and be like, wow, we flew every flight. You know, this was, so I got to fly six different passengers that weekend as well. So that just made it really fun.
What advice do you have for people like me who are nervous to go up? I mean, what do you tell them? And do you ever have somebody who wants to go for a ride and they're nervous? What do you tell them as they're getting in?
Well, I let people know that I'm afraid of heights.
And
they laugh at me. But it's true.
If I get on a ladder,
I shake like a leaf.
Stop it.
I can't go on top of a ladder without just being a wreck.
And, no way.
And okay. Something about the balloon, because it's so calm, it doesn't bother me. Like the first time I flew in one, obviously the beginning of the flight, I was really nervous. But as soon as we were up in the air, I was like, wow, this is awesome. And I forgot all about that fear. And I've had several passengers over the years that have started out really nervous, like sitting down in the basket. They don't want to look out because they're afraid. And by the end of the flight, they're peering over the basket and pointing, you know, wow, this is neat and that's neat. My son Zane is one of those people. His first flight, he started sitting on the tank in the basket and wouldn't look out until it was either myself or my wife made a comment about, hey, there's a pool down there that's got a tree growing out of it. So he immediately, he's a young kid, he peeks his head up and looks, and oh, sure enough. And then the rest of the flight, he was leaning over the basket and looking around and loved it. So
sometimes that's all it takes, just one moment of clarity. But what about someone who is shopping around for someone to take them on a hot air balloon ride? If you want to do this, or you want to buy it as a gift, what should you look for in a commercial pilot?
The first and foremost thing I would say is try to look local. And by that, I mean, obviously, there's not balloon pilots everywhere. But you'll see advertisements on the internet where one company will sell balloon rides for all sorts of different areas. Stay away from those people. Mm-hmm. There's so many scams out there. Not saying they're all scams, but you just have to be careful of that. In Wisconsin, and the Wisconsin Balloon Group is a place to look. There's a lot of good commercial pilots that do rides in Wisconsin. Waukesha area has several. Fox Valley has several. Lake Geneva area has a commercial pilot that does rides. I'm sure there's more, but the biggest thing, and probably the best way, is you come to a festival and ask a pilot.
Oh, sure.
I have a lot of people come up and ask me, how much do I charge for a ride? And I say, well, I don't give rides, but I'll point and say, there's the guy you talk to.
I don't even know. How much do they generally cost? Like you said, you don't give them, but is it a pretty wide range of prices, or is it expensive?
I don't even want to venture to guess, to be honest with you. I mean, years ago, I remember it was $225 a person for a balloon, but that was years ago. I'm sure the prices have gone up. Just with insurance and everything else.
You know, hot air ballooning is so popular in books and in movies and TV. Do you think there's any misconceptions about ballooning that you see on in popular culture, something that isn't real in real life, like something that you see in a movie and you're like, that would never happen. Never happen.
I can think of off the top of my head, but I mean, yeah, there's several, you know, movies that have featured hot air balloons, and you just kind of scratch your head a little bit. And like, how did they come up with that idea? Obviously, they never talked to somebody that flew one.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's on your bucket list? I mean, you've flown a lot of places. Where would you love to fly?
I'd really like to go fly the Badlands.
Yeah.
I've seen pictures of other balloons in the Badlands. It just looks like a really neat area to fly. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I've never gone west of South Dakota. It'd be fun to go out west and fly. There's so many places that I haven't been yet, mm-hmm. and you don't know if they're awesome to fly until you do it.
Right. Right. Do you have a list? Do you have an ongoing list of, hey, I want to go here, I want to go here, I want to go here?
In my head, kind of, but not an actual list.
Yeah. What is the most favorite place you've flown so far?
Wausau, still. I keep coming back to Wausau, and Wausau is a neat place to fly. I mean, you've got hills, you've got, you know, it's hilly, and then you've got the Wisconsin River running through the middle, and again, the people. Mm-hmm. Just because so many people, every time I come to an event, even now that I live back in Wausau again, I come to the event and I'll have somebody come up that I haven't seen in, you know, 25, 30 years.
Sure.
And hey, I didn't know you were going to be here. So that just makes it really fun.
Sure. And Wausau has such beautiful terrain too, with Rib Mountain and the river and, I mean, all of the lush greenery. It must be just beautiful when you're up in the air.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Wausau's a great place to fly. It's yeah. just really pretty.
So if somebody wants to become a pilot, somebody wants to get started in this, what do you recommend? How should they start the whole process?
The best way to start the whole process is find somebody that's flying a balloon and volunteer to help.
Yeah.
I mean, either at an event or if you know a local pilot somewhere. Just go out and crew for that person for a while. You'll learn so much about ballooning just starting out as a crew person. Mm-hmm. And then go from there. As you learn more about the process there, then you'll start meeting people that know about where you can buy equipment and what's good starting equipment and what to stay away from. The best thing to do is you hang out with balloonists, you can become a balloonist.
So what do you look for in quality equipment? I mean, is it hard to choose the right stuff?
Oh, again, it's just it's not like anybody can go buy a car,
mm-hmm.
right? And you might get a good car and you might not. Well, ballooning, there's so much equipment out there. If you don't know anything about it, there's just no way to make a choice. I mean, obviously, a young pilot doesn't have a lot of money, they're going to look for cheap.
Mm-hmm.
Well, cheap isn't always the way to go, right? Mm-hmm. You're going to have equipment that's worn out or won't pass an annual inspection. So, again, you've got to kind of become part of the community and learn that way.
Mm-hmm.
And all the balloon pilots I know will help somebody out that wants to learn.
Do you fly all seasons? I mean, do you fly year-round? I know there are some winter balloon festivals.
Yeah, there's times that are better and worse. Springtime generally isn't a great time to fly. The weather's changing. It's windy. Everything's wet.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly, otherwise, we fly pretty much year-round.
Are the challenges different in the winter? What's that like?
Winter is actually better flying as far as the balloon equipment
really?
Is concerned. You don't have to get the envelope as hot in order to fly. The air quality is generally better. The wind is generally better. Landing spots are easy to find because there's snow on farm fields, so the farmers aren't mad if you're landing in their fields.
And you're not going to get that. Get off my
right, right. The only thing winter is hard on is the pilot and the passengers. I mean, you're standing still in a basket, and it's cold, so you've really got to dress.
Got to bundle up, right?
Oh, right.
I mean, is it a lot colder up in the up?
Not a lot. Everybody thinks it's a lot colder up in the air. They say the average is 3 degrees colder every 1,000 feet you go up.
Okay.
So, and again, we're flying within a few 1,000 feet of the ground, so it's not really noticeable.
So, fall has got to be a wonderful time to fly too.
Fall's really pretty. Yeah, with the leaves changing and
yeah,
it's just really pretty.
Oh, we've got about a minute left in our time together. I guess I want to know what it is that makes you so passionate about this. What do people love about this and the whole experience of flying?
Oh, it's just everything. I mean, you just put the package together, right? You've got the people, and then how many people get to say, "Hey, I flew in a hot air balloon," or not even flew in it, but I get to fly the hot air balloon. You know, it's just a really, really neat experience. To be able to fly.
The peace, is it a way to escape everything that's below you? I mean, it's a stressful world out there, right?
Right. No, it is very calming
mm-hmm.
to get up in the air and just be you know, moving with the wind, and it's calm and it's completely quiet when you're not hitting the burner. It is just really beautiful.
Do you ever see yourself getting a bigger balloon, getting a different balloon?
Occasionally I talk about getting a bigger balloon, and then I go help somebody with a bigger balloon and realize that the equipment's a lot heavier and needs more people to move around, and then I go back to sticking with my small one.
Well, I want to thank you so much for sharing all of this. I've loved talking with you today. You're listening to Route 51 I'm Shereen Seward, extending a sincere thanks to our guest, John Bullock. Our producers are Joy Ratch-Kramer and Kate Spranger. Our executive producer is Rick Ryer. Joy is also our on-air producer today. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Special music today from the Steve Miller Band, the Cow Sills, Drew Smith, and the Byrds, with a nod to 007. You can hear the archive of today's program as well as our previous programs at WPR.org/Route 51 and on your favorite podcast platform. If you have an idea for a future program, get in touch by email, ideas@WPR.org. We'd love to hear from you. But until next week, we're headed out of town.
Touchdown, you'll find that it's